when I came back to the Central Coast, a friend of mine from my National Guard days, Sergeant Major Dan Sebi, who's a San Luis High School grad, class of 77, invited me to join the California State Guard, which is the volunteer, kind of like a sheriff's posse for the National Guard. It's a non-paid status voluntary organization that supports the National Guard. But they had a military museum command, so he invited me to participate in that here in San Luis Obispo. So I have an office at Camp San Luis. What I discovered by cross-indexing the kinds of units in various sources, the 54th Coast Artillery Regiment, which was about 1,700 soldiers, about 900 of them were white officers, but the rank and file and the chaplain were black soldiers.
Were there any black officers?
Not in the regiment that I know of.
Okay.
I have an electronic copy of their yearbook from 1941, so I have photographs of all the soldiers from that year, and none of their officers are black other than the chaplain. And I know of two different black chaplains who served with the regiment. We're just at the beginnings. I'm working with Dr. Jackson at Cal Poly, who's very interested in this subject of what it was like for this black regiment to come to the Central Coast.
In the military at that time, were all battalions segregated?
They were segregated at, depending on the kind of unit, there were black combat divisions, there were black regiments. You may have a black regiment working with another unit.
But there was not a regiment that had blacks and whites together?
No, other than you'd have white officers, black enlisted men.
So this was the 54th Coast Artillery. What were they going to be doing here?
They came to San Luis Obispo County in April of 1942, and they came in direct response to the Japanese submarine attacks along the coast. The Montebello sinking here in Morro Bay was one of a whole series of submarine attacks. The second wave of attacks at Elwood in Goleta, when a submarine shelled an oil refinery there, and that was immediately followed by the story of the Great LA Air Raid. If you watch the John Belushi 1941 movie comedy and exclude the German submarine officer from the storyline,
Okay. It
really does give you a sense for just the palpable tension and terror that the civilians were experiencing at that time.
Right. Here on the Central Coast, the 54th Coast Artillery arrives.
Check.
And it's an all-black battalion.
Mm-hmm. When 1st Battalion of the regiment arrived here in April of 1942, they took up positions in Avila and Shell Beach for A Battery, and B Battery was here in Morro Bay, and they were stationed at the Cloisters Hotel, which was still in pretty good shape. Two more guns of theirs were on the north side up at the Estero Boat Landing, which is now Dog Beach for the locals. And the battalion headquarters was at the old CCC camp, which is now the State Park campground on the back side of the bay.
Okay.
And they were a tactical unit whose job was to be alert and ready 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to respond to sightings of Japanese submarines or destroyers that may show up along the coast. There had been two series of raids so far in the war, and they arrived here ready to do business. So with those eight cannon, they could control out to about 9 miles with those guns.
And do you know what the experience was like for them here? Did they go out into the community? Did they have any time to do that?
Well, that's exactly what we're interested in exploring. There is one piece of oral history from one of the soldiers who was in 3rd Battalion, which was stationed up in Monterey. And that, tells a little bit of the story of some of the experiences they had. Honestly, that's one of the things that's got us all pumped. And when I say kind of stumped, I was talking to Dan Krieger, the Don Emeritus of Local History from Cal Poly, was talking to Jim Gregory in the South County, and Joe Dunlap, who recently written a book on Morro Bay during World War II. And this unit has faded from history almost universally.
Wow. What did you learn from the firsthand account from someone who was stationed up near, did you say Santa Cruz?
Yeah, he was stationed in Santa Cruz.
What did he experience?
Well, the things they talked about in Santa Cruz, there was kind of an awkward period there where the soldiers were being refused service, and the chaplain actually organized a threatened boycott of the city. And there were various community groups that were working to try to, you know, overcome that. But what he also talks about is the struggles they had after the war when they tried to settle in the community, and they faced discrimination and housing opportunities. They experienced frustrations in employment opportunities. Yeah, so that, you know, that was up in Santa Cruz. Well, here we have some clues. One is the fact that there was a black USO, a segregated black USO in San Luis Obispo. And actually, there were two. The first one is on Moro Street, and today is the water department for the city of San Luis Obispo. The second USO was the original white USO, which was across the street from Louisa's on Higuera. At that time, that was a Safeway. Much different from the Safeways of suburbia, but upstairs from that there was a meeting hall, very similar to the IOOF or the Oddfellows, you know, all those different groups. Well, that had been leased by the USO initially for the white soldiers until the Mill Street Ludwig USO could be built. So once the white soldiers moved uptown, the black soldiers moved from Chinatown to downtown. So there was the black USO there. So we've got clues of that. What truly happened, the black population of this county doubled in a weekend. You know, there were 36,000 citizens of San Luis Obispo in 1940. The population of GIs by mid-war was over 100,000 in the area. So similarly, here the black population doubled, but the 21 to 39-year-old population male was overly represented.
Did they bring families?
Well, that's, you know, I was talking to Dr. James Papp, and we were comparing notes, and he's the architectural historian in San Luis Obispo, and all of a sudden, virtually within 30 days of the Japanese civilians being forced onto buses for their expatriation out of the county, here these black soldiers come, but also comes their wives and their girlfriends who have been following them from various bases that they've been on so far. So it was in April of 1942. For the black community, what happened on the micro level was that housing stock, that those places for other people, others, quote unquote, other people, that had been regulated and negotiated within our community as being a safe place for other people to be, became available. And this was the same moment that this population of African American, primarily female, but probably family members as well, came into this county. And all of a sudden, that area of South Higuera switched into a vibrant black community. So today, if you want to find this, there is a park on the map that's the Edo Park, which is on Brook Street. Well, Brook Street was Edo Street that changed to Brook Street at that time. So the dual naming speaks to the dual occupation in a very short period.
So at that time, this is San Luis Obispo County, you used the term others when you were talking about, you know, who was allowed to purchase property in different areas.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you had very elaborate laws that blatantly discriminated against Chinese, Japanese, black, Hispanic, Filipino, that just called out. And many of you, if you go and pull your deeds for your house and look back at it, you're going to find those orphan stipulations that are no longer legally enforceable, but they're still there. You know, where did they find a place for the first black USO? It was in Chinatown. You know, it was an other place. So these connections are very tangible.
How common in World War II would an all-black battalion be?
The black community was very focused on what they call the double V campaign, double victory, a victory against our foes, but also a victory against segregation, a victory against repression. As a matter of fact, there was a judge who was appointed to the Secretary of War's staff to specifically oversee black issues. He actually resigned because they created the Tuskegee Airmen And it's not because the blacks were being allowed to fly. His goal was integration. His goal was not segregation. He saw it as a cop-out that the Tuskegee Airmen were created in a segregated operation, but this was very palpable.
The 54th Coast Artillery, helping to protect the coastline against an enemy attack in the Pacific.
Check. Yes.
Did they spend much time, in the cities, in the towns?
What we have been able to find, the places that we see them in the newspapers, the local newspapers and the military newspapers, is sporting. They had very competitive teams in baseball and basketball that played the local high schools and played other pickup teams, on post playing with other parts of the military, intramurals. We've got we have the black music groups singing in Morro Bay. There was a quartet that sang mm-hmm. spirituals for a Baptist church in Morro Bay. The regimental headquarters had a band with a former Cab Calloway member in it that they played on the radio. They went all around the Bay Area up there doing concerts. They were mm-hmm. fairly well known. These are just little places you see them. Yeah. Where we have been able to find them, that's where we're finding them. But we right. do not find any photographs of them in place on the beach, which is just kind of stupefying in a way. There was a very vibrant black cultural district that did form in South Agera, but this was a very agricultural community. It would have been tough to break in.
Yeah. Were there any problems? Were there any conflicts that you know of?
Well, there was one incident that is, on one level, it's very easy to just throw out there as a shock value, but in context, it takes on a very different story. At that USO on Higuera Street, one Thursday evening at 9:30, as the dance wound down, one of the soldiers went to one of the bars nearby to see if he could buy some beer for himself and his friends, and they were refused. And depending which story you read, because we've been able to uncover about six or seven, a scuffle ended up breaking out, and they ended up calling in the MPs, and it was quite a kerfluffle. But that needs to be put into context. That was the same week as the Detroit race riots. That was within a month of the Zoot Suit riots in Los Angeles.
What was the date?
June 23rd of 1943.
1943, okay.
1943, on Higuera Street, right at the old Court Street.
Higuera at Court Street in San Luis, okay.
Yeah, and all the stories we found are just of that day. No, nothing on a follow-up. But, what I see is that those soldiers had been following the news. They had been reading the black press, because there was very active press, black press, north and south, that I'm sure they would have had at the USO. So they were very aware. A series of the riots that summer were occurring over the fact that the War Department had stipulated equal pay for black and white workers. And across the South, that wasn't going over really well with the white workers. And they were targeting the blacks as stealing their jobs and taking their money.
And was the pay equal?
Through the War Department, yeah. These defense contractors had federal contracts. They had to abide by that. But what you had was, all of a sudden, like in Detroit, you had a large percentage of the Willow Run factory that was building a B-24 every hour. A large part of that workforce was black, except there was no additional provisions for a black community to live in Detroit at that time. So they were triple bunking and quadruple bunking, and all of a sudden a race riot broke out at a park in town, and 24 people were killed.
This is in Detroit.
Okay. But all of those incidents were very present in their minds. This was a lot of frustrations. At this point, this unit had formed in February of 41, 42, 43. So this is 2 years into the war.
And they're in San Luis Obispo County.
And they've been on 24-hour standby for the whole time. Stresses were there. And across the country, there was a series of these race riots, or and they, really they're economic riots in many cases. You know, so it's not just the guy asked for beer and he didn't have beer. It's a much deeper story.
There was a lot building up at that point.
Yeah.
In Santa Cruz, and I think it's at the lighthouse, there's a plaque.
Yes, there is a plaque there that was established in memory of the 54th F Battery.
Anything like that here in
Morro Bay? No, there is a brief mention at the Cloisters parking area that mentions the 47th Coast Artillery for some reason.
I mean, they just but, got it wrong.
Yeah, it's a typo, right. And I've seen it repeated in other sources, so that's not surprising.
So, as a historian now, what part of this story interests you, and where are you headed as a historian?
Well, I'm very interested in any soldier's story being told. That's my father was a soldier. I was a soldier. The 54th calls to me because, and I was an artillery officer at one point in my life. So I understand. I have fired those kinds of guns before. I understand what they were doing in a very factual way. But their story had just been kind of erased, not recorded, not interpreted. So, you know, I want to get their military story out. I think it's an important story from the coastal defense community. There is a fantastic museum down in San Pedro for Fort MacArthur, and specifically it is the Coast Artillery Museum there, and they interpret their story. The Maritime Museum here in Morro Bay has several pieces of the story that just need to be linked together.
The story of the 54th, all black.
Yes, because what they do have is a wonderful set of miniatures that have been made of the Japanese submarine that sunk the Montebello. They also have a scale model of the Montebello itself to tell that story. Well, the 54th came here as a direct response to the Japanese attacks on the oil industry. And of the 12 attacks that occurred along the coast, almost all of them were oil tankers. So that was a national priority, a defense priority. San Luis Obispo was the home of two major oil terminals. You had the Estero Bay Terminal at Port San Luis, the Avila Terminals. The Montebello had just finished loading 10,000 tons of oil before she steamed up and was torpedoed off of Morro Bay. Another vessel was steaming by that had already been attacked by a submarine and escaped into Estero Bay. But the other very tangible part of the story is there's a tugboat that sits out front.
Out front of the
Maritime Museum here in Morro Bay. That is the Alma. Well, the Alma, not only was it a rescue vessel that had actually been in Estero Bay waiting for yet another tanker to come, so that's three different tankers within a 12-hour period transiting this area, but they were one of the two rescue tugs that went out to help save the survivors of the attack when the Montebello sunk. But that same tugboat towed targets for the 54th Coast Artillery for the next 2 years.
And that's not mentioned.
That's not interpreted yet. Certainly we will.
That's where you're headed with this. February is Black History Month. Like you say, fill out the history of this area. Sometimes you don't want to wait till it's too late.
Yes, and this is where I'm working with John Ashbaugh at the History Center to do a presentation on the 54th this month. I'm also planning to be speaking at Heroes Hall in Orange County on the 54th as another project. But I'm very interested in, you know, trying to get the story here. There in San Luis Obispo, you have the first place that the black soldiers had the USO right there on Morro Street. Would be a wonderful place to contemplate having a commemoration. I'm talking to the historian with the state parks as well as the Morro Bay Historical Society at this point. I work with Jim Gregory, who's trying to figure out a good place to memorialize them down in South County. For black history, this is an important unit, and it has really kind of been lost to history, and I don't like that.
It's nice to fill in some of the holes in what just generally gets reported.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me again how you, Eric, are involved with this history.
through the State Guard's Military Museum Command, and we work out of Camp San Luis Obispo on that. This is an extra project we're picking up for the locality to help interpret that. Some of the public outreach we've done, we've created a Facebook group for the 54th Coast Artillery. So we've been putting a lot of the images that we have, some video. It's a great repository of information for that. I'm really excited to try to meet the descendants of these 54th soldiers.
Yeah.
Luther Vines was a veteran who lived in the area, and their graveside in Los Osos, where I was able to find him. I want to be available to the families whose fathers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, uncles were here at that time to understand more about their contributions and what their service was.
And to get their story out.
And to get their story. And we're working with Cal Poly's archives potentially at having a place to host this information for future research. So we're very much interested in being available to help build out the social and public history.
You know, there's history in drawers and cupboards and boxes and attics. Yep. If someone does have information,
I would love to talk to
ancestors,
them.
Okay.
You can contact you through the Facebook group there, but I'll also give you my contact information. Check on the History Center website for the final version of the presentation I'll be doing this month.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful opportunity.
It's been great. I learned so much.